Let's come on in if we could and get, so we can get started. This class period, we're going to move away from the judgment of the saints and talk about the judgment of natural Israel in the day of the Lord, when the time of the kingdom will be set up. Where are we on our reading? Remember? Okay. Let's go to Ezekiel 38, verse 14 through 16. What is the primary mechanism that God will use to punish the nation of Israel in the latter days? And that's what we're going to talk about. Ezekiel 38, verse 14 through 16. Okay, in this chapter and in chapter 39, I think we find the manifestation of God's judgments against Israel. And that manifestation is poured out, and the judgments are poured out through this company known as Gog, as we just read about. G-O-G, Gog. Verse 16, who is bringing Gog against the land of Israel? I. The word is I. Who is the I in that verse? It's Yahweh. So think about that, young people, and think about what we've talked about, the judgments of Yahweh in the day of the Lord. Yahweh is bringing this company of individuals, this nation, against His people. And what is the, why would He do that? In verse 16 it says, so that the heathen being the nations, may know Me. So not only is God bringing the Gog into the land as an invader and a destroyer of certain things, but it's also so that the nations will know God Himself. Let's look at Zechariah 14. One through four. Okay, I think we should remember, young people, that these verses in Zechariah and the verses in Ezekiel that we read are talking about the same event. Okay? And that event being the invasion of the Gogian host, the northern invader in the day of the Lord. Let's also go to the book of Daniel. On our readers, let's start at verse 40 and read through 45. Daniel 11. And that's not on your list, so you might want to write that down. Daniel 11, verse 40 through 45. Okay, again, we see these sets of verses, young people, what we read, not only in the Ezekiel 38, 14, 16, but all of Ezekiel 38, 39, and the first few verses of Zechariah 14, speaking about the same event. And that event being the invasion of Israel by a northern invader that the scriptures identify as Gog. And we'll talk about, go back, you might want to keep your hands there in Ezekiel 38 and 39. We're going to be flipping back and forth there to various supporting passages to those particular verses. But these chapters and others are talking about an invasion into the land of Israel for the purpose of judgments against Israel. When we think of Daniel, let's go to chapter 2. What normally do we think about when we think of the book of Daniel? I'll give you a hint. It's behind me. If that helps. What do we normally think about? Most often we think about Nebuchadnezzar's image. Is that not correct? We call that the backbone of prophetic understanding. That's the way I look at it. It's the backbone of the kingdom of men that God has told us this is how the kingdom of men will look like through the ages. I think if we look at Ezekiel 38 and 39, we see more of the details of that latter part where the stone smites the image on his feet. Let's look at Daniel 2, I've lost it. Just a second. Okay, let's look at Daniel 2. Okay, and keep in mind there is an invader into Israel, but there's also God will use a certain power, a certain entity to destroy that invader into Israel. Let's look at Daniel 2, verse 34 and 35. Okay, think about the Nebuchadnezzar's image, and you got another a version of the picture in your handouts. What does it say in that last verse? They're broken to pieces what? What's the word that the scriptures use? And you're going to have to really speak up back here. Thank you. They're broken to pieces together. What does that mean, brothers and sisters and young people? It says it smites them on the feet, right? They're broken in pieces together, all at one time, is what that means. If we think about this Gogian invader, that's the latter-day representation of what Daniel is speaking about. To be broken to pieces together, that means all of the representation of those countries and those people will be broken together, broken in pieces together, or all as one, if you will. So keep that in mind. Let's go back to Ezekiel. Let's look at Ezekiel 39, verse 8. This is the day whereof I've spoken. What's the subject matter of this class? The day of the Lord. This is the day that I have spoken of throughout all my holy scriptures. This is the day that all of the prophecies are pointing forward to. It's not my words, that's the words of the prophet Ezekiel. If you don't have that verse marked, mark it. This is the day that I have spoken of. Let's look at Ezekiel 38, verse 17.
Thank you.
Young people and adults, if you don't have that verse marked, mark it. What does God say? Who is this person? It's He who He has spoken of through all of His holy prophets. This Gog, G-O-G, invader, is the one that the prophets of old have spoken about. Those prophets before Ezekiel were pointing forward to this Gogian invader. That verse that we read in chapter 39. This is the day. This is Him. So we can see the connection between the prophets of old and this invader from the north, the Gogian invader. So the questions we ask ourselves are the same questions we asked before. They are start with W. It's what? Who, what, when, and where? Who is Gog? What will He do? When will He come? Where is He supposed to come into? If we understand those questions, and I think Ezekiel 38 and 39 gives us those answers, because I think there's so much detail in there that ties those two chapters and that invader into all the other prophets that spoke of that time. Who, what, when, and where? Who is Gog? When will the invasion occur? What is the purpose of the invasion? Who will oppose it? Will there be anybody that oppose this invasion? And what is the outcome of the invasion? And will that latter day invader of Israel be destroyed or allowed to continue? I'd like to kind of just give you a summary of Ezekiel 38 and 39 and just kind of look through the verses as I'm and scan over the verses as we talk about this. Chapter 38, 1 through 7 tells us of the nations that associated with this invading army. Verses 8 through 13 speaks of the actual invasion of Israel and the challenge from other nations, or the opposition of other nations and the identification of those other nations. Verses 14 through 16, which we read, tells us what God's ultimate purpose with that invasion is. Verses 17 through 23 speak of the destruction of the invading army. Now we move to chapter 39. Verse 1 through 16 tells us about the burial and the ultimate destruction of the invading army. Verse 17 through 20, the scriptures speak of a feast that will celebrate this destruction of the latter-day enemy of Israel. And finally, verse 21 through 29 speaks of the restoration of Israel. That restoration that the prophet spoke about. So to me, that's the whole vision, if you will, of the kingdom of God, of in relationship to natural Israel. If you didn't get all of that, do I need to go over them again? Or you want to get them after class? Let me just go over them again real quick. Verses 1 through 7, starting in chapter 38, speak of the nations associated with Gog. 8 through 13, the invasion of Israel and the challenge from other nations. 14 through 16, God's purpose with this invader. 17 through 23 speaks of the destruction of the army. 1 through 16, the burial of the army. Verses 17 through 20, the feast of celebration, because this invading army has been destroyed. And then the last few verses speak of the restoration of Israel. Okay, we're going to skip around on our questions a little bit. We're going to answer the when question first. When will Gog, this latter-day invader, invade the nation of Israel? Scriptures tells us in verse 8 and 11 of chapter 38, and where are we on the readers? Let's read verses 8 and 11 first. Ezekiel 38, verse 8, verse 11. Okay? When does it say that the invasion will occur? At the time when Israel dwells safely. Let's look at verse 12. Can you go ahead? Would you go ahead and read verse 12 too? Okay, verse 12 tells of the purpose of the objective of Gog as he invades the land. To do what? Two things. To take... Anybody? To take a spoil and a prey. Keep in mind that objective of Gog. And let's turn over and look at a verse in Luke. Now think, in my mind, this help explains what does it mean for Israel to dwell safely. Let's look at Luke 11. Luke 11, verse 21 and 22. Okay, I want us to think about those verses in relation to the concept that Ezekiel gives us of Israel dwelling safely. Okay, the word safely in that particular verse, and going back to Ezekiel 38 now, comes from the Hebrew word betach, if I'm saying that right, B-E-T-A-C-H. That word can mean a time of true peace, where you're really at peace, or a time of perceived peace because of the confidence that you have in your own armies and your own weapons of war. Think about that. It can mean two things. What did we read in Luke? Let's go back to Luke 11. Let's put those two nations in the context of Luke 11 and see what we have. The nations of Israel and the Gogian invader. When a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. The strong man being Israel. They have such confidence in their arms, their own weapons, their own way, that they believe that their goods are in peace. Look at verse 22. But when a stronger than he shall come and overcome him, he taketh from him all of his armor, wherein he trusted, and what did he do? He divided his spoil. Isn't that the objective of Gog in Ezekiel 38? To take a spoil and to take a prey? So think about that. Israel has such confidence in their own war, in their own weapons of war, in their own defenses, that they believe at the time of the Gogian invasion that they will be at peace. But then a stronger man comes, that stronger man being the Gogian invader, that God will bring upon the nation in order to take a spoil. So I think we can see that this, in Ezekiel 38, this is the way that we should think about this, is that Israel dwelling in safety means they have such confidence in their own weapons, their own defenses, that they have no, they place their own trust, their trust in their own things of the flesh. We believe this invasion will occur prior to the entry of Christ and the multitudinous saints into the Holy Land. As we talked about in that list that we had of a possible order of events, Christ returns, the resurrection, the judgment seat, and we believe that the Gogian invader will occur at some point in time while the saints are at the judgment seat. So then, now we have the when. Let's look at Ezekiel 39, verse 26. And there's three verses that we can look at that in my mind supports our belief that this Gogian invader is in the land prior to the re-entry of Christ and the multitudinous saints. Ezekiel 39, 26 is one of them. Where are we on our reading, Katie? Okay. The prophet says, after they have borne their shame and all their trespasses where they have trespassed against me, when they dwelt safely, right? When they dwelt safely in their land and none made them afraid. If Christ is already in the land when the Gogan invader comes, can Israel be living in their trespasses and shame? I don't think so. I think they'll be recognizing their... If that was true, they would have recognized their Messiah and started being obedient to His commandments. So verse 26 is a good clue as to when Israel dwells safely. Let's also look at verse 10 of chapter 39. Lydia, please. Okay, look at the last few phrases of that verse. What does it say? They shall spoil those that spoil them. Who is they? Anybody? Israel. Right? They shall spoil those. Who's those? The Gog invader. That spoiled them. So let's read it like that. Israel will spoil the northern invader who had spoiled them. They will also rob those that rob them. If Christ is in the land when Gog returns, adults, think about this. Can they spoil Israel? Can Israel be spoiled at that time by a northern invader? Let's look at Ezekiel 39, verse 22. Okay. When will Israel know their God? What does it say? From that day and forward. What day? The day after the feast of celebration after the destruction of the Gogan invader. Think about that. They will not know them. Israel will not know, in the truest sense, their God until after the Gogan invader is destroyed. Not before. So to me, those three verses give us a very good clue that answers the question, when will the Gogan invasion occur? What's the objective of the invasion? Ezekiel 38:12, Ezekiel 39:10, and Zechariah 14:1-2 tells us that the objective of a Gogan invader is to take a spoil. That's their objective. What's the godly... That's their perspective and their objective. But what does the Scriptures tell us that the objective of God, Yahweh, is to bring this invader in? Let's look at Ezekiel 38:16. Leah, would you want to read that? Thank you. And also Ezekiel 38:23, whoever's next. Okay, and let's go back and read 39:22. The objective of God bringing this Gogan invader into the land is in those three verses. Let's go back and look at them again. Verse 16, that the heathen may know me, the nations of the world may know me. Verse 23, that I, being Yahweh, will be known in the eyes of the nation. And verse 22 in chapter 39, to me the ultimate objective is so that Israel will know their God from that day and forward. Young people, I want you to think about that. There is a reason that God brings this latter-day invader into Israel so that the nations of the world, so that Israel primarily will know their God. That is the reason. Who is Gog? Who is Gog? Ezekiel 38, verse 17, we read, tells us, the prophet tells us that this is he who I have spoken of by the prophets of old. So there must be some clues in the prophecies that were given prior to Ezekiel. I'm not sure the adults have this in y'all's handout. The young people do. The title of it is, Who is Gog? There's a lot of verses there that I want us to refer to. And I would like for the adults to write these down. When we try to understand that verse, Ezekiel 38:17, when God Himself tells us that art thou He of whom I have spoken of in old time by my servants, it is imperative that we understand where God spoke of that prophet. I mean, of that invader, that latter-day invader. We must understand in the Scriptures that God tells us He spoke of him. So it's up to us to search out a matter and find out where He has spoken of him. Now, I'm going to give you these verses and chapters. Some of these are types that point towards the great antitype of the Gog invader. I think the young people have these, but go ahead and just follow along with me. And we don't have time to read all of these because there's a whole lot of them. Psalm 68, verse 21. Habakkuk 3, 13 through 14. Joel 2, verse 20. And I'm just going to give you chapters now, and within these chapters, there's types that point toward the antitype of the Gog and invader. Genesis 14. Exodus 17. Daniel 2. Daniel 4. Daniel 7. Daniel 11. Joel 2, Joel 3, Amos 1, Micah 5, Habakkuk 2, Zechariah 14, Zephaniah, all three chapters. Numbers 24. I would ask in your studies, look at those chapters. See if you can see the type that's pointing forward towards this antitype. Use our pioneer works for helps if necessary. But see if you can see that. Who is Gog? Let's go back to the first few verses of Ezekiel 38. I think all of y'all have got a map in the back of your handout, where we have these nations identified as historically believed by Christadelphians. This one's a little hard to read, but we put it up there because I know the adults is in black and white, and that didn't come through very clear, and this might not be much clearer, but I put it up there just to help us. In the In the King James, in the first few verses of Ezekiel 38, verse 2 specifically, it says, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Other versions read that as the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. So where are all these nations? And we're just going to point these out. Our pioneers are full of references to historical documents and histories that speak of the nations that Ezekiel identifies in his tongue or as how they were known in his day. But we have very many helps from our pioneers that we could use. If you can see up here, this is where Rosh is, and Meshach and Tubal. This is Gomer, Magog, Tagarmar, Persia, Ethiopia, Libya. We can see down here Sheba and Dedan are down in this area. Study your map. As I said, we definitely don't have time to go into the history of these nations. I think Brother Adam may speak a little bit more about this map a little tomorrow, so we can gain some more information to take back with us to add to our studies. And it's important for us, young people, when God, Yahweh, tells us these nations that are identified in Ezekiel 38:1-7, when God identifies those nations, we have to understand who those nations are. We can't just read them. We have to get an understanding of who those nations are. This is part of the establishment of the day of the Lord. Because what did we read in Ezekiel 38:17? God Himself brings this invader into the nation for two reasons. So that Israel may know their God, so that the nations of the world may know God. This is not something that we can just put to the side. This is why it's important to study prophecy. What's the outcome of the invasion? Ezekiel 38:9. It says, "Thou shalt ascend and come like a storm. Thou shalt be like a cloud to cover the land, thou and all thy bands and many people with thee." And also verse 16, "Thou shalt come up against my people of Israel as a cloud to cover the land. It shall be in the latter days, and I will bring thee against my land, that the heathen may know me, when I shall be sanctified in thee, O Gog, before their eyes." Remember what we read in Ezekiel 30, verse 3? How one description of the day of the Lord. Let's go back and look at that since we're here. Ezekiel 30, verse 3 says, "The day is near, even the day of the Lord is near, a cloudy day. It shall be the time of the heathen." A cloudy day. What is it we read in Ezekiel 38, verse 9 and verse 16. He shall come what? As what, young people? Look it up in the verse. Verse 9 and verse 16. He shall come as what? A storm and a cloud. A storm and a cloud. The day of the Lord will be as a cloudy day. We see a reference even in the earlier chapters of Ezekiel to this latter day invader coming as a cloud. When we see a cloud, what do we think of? Storms? Possibly? Hail? Lightning? Tornadoes? Heavy winds? Think of that. Those are all destructive elements sent by God. Agreed? We have a perfect example on our property of that, on that cabin right down there. What happened? God sent storms, destroyed that cabin, right? Why was it destroyed? What was the impact, the outcome of that destruction? It was in total disarray. It was unusable. We had to tear it down to the foundations, if you will. That's what this storm is. God is sending this judgment on Israel to bring them back to the foundations of the apostles and the holy prophets of old. So we have a visual down there. A storm of destruction to bring it back to the foundations. Let's look at Daniel 12, verse 1. Where are we on our reading? Okay, Daniel 12:1.
"And at that time shall Michael stand up,
Okay, and also Jeremiah 30, verse 7. Okay, what are the two, what are the things that we see there in those verses that we read? The day of the Lord is a time of trouble, as we read in both of those. Verse 7 that we just read speaks about that day, and there will be none like it. That day being the day that Ezekiel says, this is the day that I've spoken of. Again, we see a connection for that. Why would God... Maybe I get some help from the adults. Why will God send the northern invader against Israel? The objective is so that they may know Him, but why would He send them against them? Do they know God at this today? Do they recognize their Messiah? Do they recognize God's Son? Do they believe as a nation... We're talking as a nation. Do they believe and recognize the promises to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and David? Are they obedient to God's commandments as a nation? Sure, there are probably some individually, but as a nation, I think this is the reason. It's so that Israel may know their God and become obedient to Him. But how will Gog be destroyed? It tells us in... Let's go back to Ezekiel. It tells us in Ezekiel 39. In verses 17 through 20, about a great feast that celebrates the destruction of the Gogian invader. How will they be destroyed? I think there's two ways the Scriptures tells us about. There will be military victories that will be experienced by the multitudinous Christ as they leave Sinai going to the Holy Land. But also in the last chapters, last few verses of Ezekiel 38, it speaks of natural destruction. What does it say in Ezekiel 38, 22? I will plead, or I will contend, I being God, Him being the northern invader, Yahweh will contend against him with pestilence, with blood, will rain upon him and upon his bands, and upon the many people that are with him, an overflowing rain, great hailstones, fire and brimstone. Thus I will magnify myself. God says I will use these elements and my means to magnify himself to the nations of the world. Keep your fingers there and go to Zechariah. We're also told in Zechariah 14, where it says, the day of the Lord shall come, thy spoil divided in thy midst. Again, a reference back to Ezekiel 38. That in that day shall the... And the verse 4 is where I'm reading from. In that day, his feet, being the Lord, the multitudinous Christ, shall stand upon the Mount of Olives. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west. There shall be a very great valley, and half the mountain shall move toward the north, half toward the south. Now let's skip over to verse 8. And it shall be in that day, what day? The day of the Lord, when all these nations be gathered to Jerusalem, Christ setting His feet on the Mount of Olives. In that day, living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea and half toward the hinder sea. In summer and winter shall it be. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. And that day there shall be one Lord, and His name one. And all the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. It shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place, from Benjamin's gate into the place of the first gate, to the corner gate, and from the tower of Hananiel into the king's winepress. Men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, and Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. So how is God using the natural elements? And I want you to think about this visually if you can. When Christ and the multitudinous Christ sets their feet on the Mount of Olives, what does it say happens? The earth, the world, at that time it will experience a great earthquake. And what is the ultimate purpose of that earthquake? It's to put the land in place where the temple described in Ezekiel 40-48 can be built exactly as God has described. Notice what some of those verses that we read in verse... In verse 9, 8, 9, and 10, it says that the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon. It talks about a valley. It talks about something lifted up. The prophecies in Ezekiel were talking about the temple being built. It speaks of rivers flowing out of the temple. What causes all of that to occur? And I think it's the earthquake that we just read about in Zechariah 14, 1 through 11. It's such a mighty earthquake to transform the land where it can be built, where this temple can be built. The house of prayer for all people. There's specific specifications, young people, in the latter chapters of Ezekiel that you'll be studying and learning about as you continue to grow in the truth, that talks about how that temple and that altar will be built. Let's go back to Zechariah 14. It says, "Living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, half toward the hinder sea." That's speaking of the Mediterranean Sea and the Dead Sea, young people. "The land will be turned into a plain from Geba to Rimmon." It's a land that will be raised above the existing terrain. In the little time that we have left, though, we want to talk about these earthquakes. This earthquake specifically. What causes this? What can cause this river? Going back to Ezekiel, keep your place in Zechariah. Go back to Ezekiel 38. And I want you to hold your place in Ezekiel 38, in those last two or three verses, and also in Zechariah 14. What causes these earthquakes? Would anyone care to define how an earthquake is created? Anybody? I've got a definition from the internet, but if you want to give me your own version of it. Scott? Okay? Did everybody hear that? It's where the plates of the earth shift. Let me read the longer version. And just to add to that a little bit. Earthquakes occur when pressures within the earth build to such a point that causes these plates to shift. It causes enormous strain, rupture of the earth. How many have not seen a picture of the results of an earthquake? We all know how the earth just kind of breaks open. And that's caused by these shifts of these plates. It sends shock waves through the earth that causes blocks of rocks even far and far away from the center of the earthquake to just snap and just snap apart. It causes damages such as fires, buildings destroyed, loss of life, injuries, landslides, avalanches. All of these things can be caused by earthquakes. There are three types of fault lines in the earth. That's why I brought these boxes in. There are three types of fault lines. One is called a strike slip, where the earth moves horizontal like this. That's called a strike slip that causes earthquake. The other two kinds are called, it's a normal fault line where one part of the earth goes down. The other one is called a reverse fault line, where one part of the earth goes up. Those are basically the three types of fault lines that we have in the world. Horizontal and vertical. Which kind do you think fault line is in the Middle East and Israel? What would you think? One that goes horizontal? Or based on what we read in Zechariah, one that goes up and down? There's only two guesses. It's not a hard question. It's one that goes vertical. And how do we know that? I mean, science tells us that, but also Zechariah and Ezekiel tells us that, right? If the land has to be raised and a valley created, it has to go up and down. So think about that when we read about this earthquake in Ezekiel 14. It's an earthquake that goes down. It's the fault line that goes down. Is that the only place in the earth that we will see damage from this earthquake? I contend no. If you, I don't know if you can see this, and I'm not sure this is in the young people's handout. But it's a picture of the world with all the fault lines identified. I've got to get my bearings here. Israel is right in the middle of three fault lines. The Arabian plate, the African plate, and the Eurasia plate. It's right there in the middle. And that's also, it's that place that has earthquakes that will go up and down, not horizontal. Why is that important? I contend that when the earthquake occurs, the earthquake in Zechariah 14, we're going to see massive destruction throughout the world. How many monuments of men have been built throughout the cities of the world that bring honor to who? Man, not God. Those things will not exist in the kingdom, I don't think. What's going to bring them down? I think it's the result of these earthquakes. I like to think of these fault lines, if you can visualize this, being a bowl of Jell-O. If you move one cube of Jell-O, what happens to the other cubes? They also move, right? Think about that. I think this is what also happens when this earthquake of such magnitude will happen. There's two ways to measure earthquakes. Anybody know what they are? Of course you do. So tell me. Two ways of measuring earthquakes. I'm sorry? The Richter scale. But what does the Richter scale measure? It measures the magnitude of the earthquake. There's another way that measures the intensity of the earthquake. This earthquake, to make these changes that we read about in the Scriptures, is going to have to be such magnitude, such intensity, I don't think the instruments of man can even measure it. If you think about that, on the Richter scale, is everyone familiar with the Richter scale of how it measures that an earthquake is a 6.3 or a 7.8 or a 2.3? That measures the intensity, I'm sorry, the magnitude of the earthquake. And this is actually the energy that the earthquake produces. Right, it's on a scale of 1 to 10. Have you ever heard of a magnitude of 10 earthquake? In our time, have you ever heard of a magnitude of 9? There have been some in history, according to historians. Have you ever heard of a magnitude of 8? Of course we have. And 7 and 6 and 5. What is one of the signs of the times in these latter days? Earthquakes in diverse places. Now, I believe that's natural, but it's also has a political slant to it, too. When the Richter scale is used to measure earthquakes, it measures it from 1 to 10. And we have to remember, and it's hard to visualize this, but every increase of 1 means a tenfold increase in the energy of the earthquake. Okay? So an earthquake of 1 can be detectable by instruments, but doesn't cause much damage. An earthquake of a magnitude of 2 is 10 times as powerful as an earthquake of 1, is what that means. Okay? If an earthquake occurs of a magnitude of 8 on the Richter scale, that causes total major damage in the nations of the world. And just think about the magnitude that this is going to have to incur. I don't think it can even be measured. And if that's the case, think of the damage and destruction of all of the humanistic monuments in the world, be it the religious monuments, the political monuments, monuments of man that they have built to honor man is not going to exist any longer in the kingdom of God. And I think that, in my mind, is caused by this earthquake. I think in all of your handouts, you've got a chart that talks about the biblical earthquakes. We're not going to read about these, but go back and read about these earthquakes and how God uses earthquakes to bring about His plan and purpose. It occurs a multitude of numerous times. Now I'm going to close with just this last statement, and I think this is also in your handouts. What is the purpose of the earthquake in Zechariah 14? The way I see it, it's threefold. It's God will use this earthquake and the devastation, destruction from it to destroy the northern invader that we read about in Ezekiel 38 and 39. It's also to spread massive destruction throughout the earth by the chain reaction along the world's fault lines. And the third outcome is the most important one in my mind, the elevation of Mount Zion. The area from Geba to Rimmon, 6 miles north of Jerusalem, is where Geba is supposed to be, to Rimmon, about 30 miles southwest of Jerusalem. An area, very large area, transformed into a plain or a valley, and the ancient territory of Mount Zion be elevated so that the house of prayer for all people will be built. We also know that living waters will come out from the temple altar and will flow to the Dead Sea and to the Mediterranean. Those living waters that will bring life to the land and people of that time. So to me, that's the threefold purpose of the earthquake. To destroy Gog, the invader. To destroy the man-made monuments throughout the earth. But finally, and most importantly, to bring the land of Israel to a point where the nation of Israel will be established and the kingdom of God established. That completes all I want to talk about anyway. Thank you for your attention. And one thing I'd like to say, that I think that we've all, throughout the week, we've applauded the efforts of those who have been instrumental in keeping this going this week. Let's applaud young people. They've been very attentive, taking notes, and they now know what this means. So, thank y'all for y'all's attention.